This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The House of Representatives now has the budget mega bill that narrowly passed the Senate on Tuesday. Speaker Mike Johnson says he's confident it will pass and soon be on President Trump's desk. Brian Koberger expected in court today to change his not guilty plea to guilty in the murder of four University of Idaho students in 2022. ABC legal analyst Shanna Lloyd says he is expected to get four life sentences without the possibility of parole.
The prosecution and the defendant are going to agree to the terms. Once this agreement is reached, it still has to be submitted to the judge, and the judge must approve it. If the judge does not find that it's satisfactory, he can reject the plea deal. And so that's what this hearing is for.
Back at it today in New York, the jury in hip-hop mogul Sean Combs' trial. Jurors telling the judge they have decided on four of the five counts. Lululemon is suing Costco, alleging the company is producing nearly identical clothing products and selling them for a fraction of the price. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The Reedsburg Area Medical Center has announced it will be opening the RAMC Laval Clinic in partnership with the Laval Telephone Cooperative to bring primary care to Laval and surrounding communities in the fall. The clinic will provide a local health care option for preventative wellness care. The RAMC Laval Clinic will be located in the Laval Telephone Cooperative building on Highway 33. It will be open Monday through Friday and will be primarily staffed by nurse practitioner or physician's assistant and medical assistants. There will be five exam rooms, basic labs, and the RAMC pharmacy team is working on a way to fill some prescriptions in Laval. Over the next several months, RAMC will be recruiting providers and staff for the Laval Clinic team. They will also be sharing more information about establishing care in Laval for interested patients. Updates will be available on the RAMC website. Safe, sane, sober. Three words to keep in mind when using fireworks at home. Lisa Hale has more.
Most fire departments will recommend leaving the fireworks to the professionals. But with Independence Day celebrations, there are bound to be some people using fireworks at home. Green Bay Metro Fire Captain Nick Craig said fireworks cause thousands of children to end up in the emergency room every year.
The biggest thing is the amount of injuries. We're looking at over 10,000 injuries caused by consumer fireworks every year. And the ones that are legal for consumers to buy are actually causing the majority of those injuries.
Sparklers are prime examples of that.
They burn at over 1,200 degrees. That's super hot. Obviously, the end of the metal rod on the sparkler is red hot when it's done burning. Sparklers account for 29% of fireworks injuries for children under the age of five.
I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Let's play two. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers and the Mets rained out last night in New York, so the two teams playing a doubleheader today at 16-9. Milwaukee, the hottest team in the National League for the month of June. I asked Sal Frelick, does he feel confident about the crew right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we kind of came together almost about a month and a half ago now, and I think we kind of identified we maybe weren't playing our culture, our brand of baseball, and we fixed that pretty quickly, and good things started to happen. So as long as we can control that, I think we'll be in a good spot.
NBA, the Bucks land Pacers center Miles Turner in free agency, but release Damian Lillard. They'll pay Lillard $22.5 million per year for the next 5 years. So what does Giannis think?
Sources that relate to me that Giannis Antetokounmpo is not pleased with the Bucks' decision to buy out Damian Lillard for the remainder of his contract. He just didn't like how it was handled, and so I was told that he is not pleased with what transpired with Damian Lillard.
That's Chris Hayes of the NBA Network with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have a slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm late this afternoon and again tonight. Otherwise, mostly sunny today with a high right around 87 this afternoon. Tonight will drop down to the mid-60s. Tomorrow, sunshine, scattered storms, high of 87. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Milwaukee film critic Matt Miller and Madison-based filmmaker Wendy Schneider, who will discuss her screening of the Smart Studio story at the Atwood Music Hall. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning, July 2nd, 2025. Parker Olson's down in Madison in Studio A2. We'll chat with him again in just a little bit. And we have a guest, State Representative Angela Stroud, who will be joining us shortly as well. Brittany Merlot is off today, so keep listening to your favorite Civic Media radio station throughout the day for updates on your local forecast. But let me tell you who else is coming up along the network today. Coming up after this fine program is a finer program, Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair and Greg Bach. Dan Schaefer will be appearing there at 9:30 this morning to talk about the state budget agreement. A little after 10 a.m., they will be joined by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Do you remember the Oprah Winfrey joke? Was it Dave Letterman that told it when he was hosting the Oscars and talking about Uma Thurman? Oprah? That's kind of me with Darren Von Ruden and Derek Van Orden. You don't want to get those two confused. They could not be more opposite in their... One is actually dedicated to farmers and improving the rural economy of Wisconsin. The other's a member of Congress. On the Todd Alba Show, I will join Todd at 2 o'clock along with Trigvi Olson from the Lincoln Project. And then the Maggie Dawn Show, a special edition at 4 o'clock today called Freedom Under Attack, including guests David Volker, a UW Green Bay professor of humanities and history, Howard Schweber, a UW professor of American politics and political theory, and at 5:06, Kathy Kramer, UW professor and chair of letters and science in American politics. And then finally, Nightlight with Pete Schwabba from 6 to 8 tonight includes a visit with Milwaukee film critic Matt Mueller and director Wendy Schneider. All of that ahead across the Civic Media Radio Network. Brewers were rained out yesterday, so there is a doubleheader today. Two games with the New York Mets, and it's a split doubleheader. So tune in at 11:35 this morning for pregame, for the makeup game, game one of the series with the Mets, and then 5:35 tonight for game two when Jacob Mizorowski will be pitching. Freddie Peralta is doing the opening game, again, pregame at 11:35. When we originally booked State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, it was because she had to vote no on a bill that was purportedly going to help with the removal of lead water service lines in the Superior area, but there were strings attached. Since that time, since we booked her as a guest, there have been some very positive developments in that area, and so we're very happy to welcome Angela to the program now to tell us what's the latest in Superior. We'll talk about the whole range of the problem and the different ways you could address it, and hopefully a way that works out best for all parties concerned. Angela Stroud, how are you? Good morning.
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So that's kind of, you know, the setup was there was this bill and you weren't thoroughly happy with it. But what has happened, you know, since the bill was being considered in the legislature?
Yeah, so this bill would change state law to give the last private water utility, Superior Water, Light, and Power, access to public money to replace lead service lines. And the way that the Republicans who introduced the legislation seem to think about it is, let's just change state law and no big deal. For me, it's a really big deal when we change state law, especially giving a for-profit private company access to public dollars. So my thinking the whole time was, well, what is it? What's in it for the customers of Superior? How do we get the best deal possible for them? And I had some concerns. So one of my biggest concerns was the cost of replacement. The company was citing an average cost of replacement that was twice the statewide average. And even though they would get access to public money, customers would still be left with 25% of that cost. So when you have what seemed to be an inflated cost, then the remainder is passed on to customers, and we're giving public money to a private company. It just wasn't good enough. We needed something in return, a better deal. And so for the last few months, I've been working really hard to try to figure out a deal between the company and the city of Superior. And we didn't have a deal when the bill went to the floor, so I was a no vote. And until we got a deal, I was going to stay a no, and I was going to encourage the governor to veto it. But on one of the last possible days, we got a deal.
Yes, you did, and did not, you know, just accept what was given to you in the form of a bill, because I'm sure you're aware, voting no on a bill that purports to help your own constituents, whether we like it or not, that's something that people from the opposing party would try to use as a club and beat you over the head with it. She voted no against removing lead water lines in her own district, but you were looking for a better deal. And so you feel now that this agreement that goes along with it, how did that go? Did you find willing participants? Was it a smooth process? Who all deserves, you know, credit for making this happen?
Yeah. So on the first point, it's clear that there were political dynamics at play about trying to target me. And so we can dig into that if you want. But to the good news, what really happened was, you know, the city and the utility, they have a long history, way before any of us were born. But the current leadership, you know, they've had some things happen where there wasn't a whole lot of trust. And so there was an interest in getting the bill from the utility. And the city, as I engaged more and more with the city, they started to sort of come around to the idea that there could be a benefit for the city as well. So my job really was to try to get these two entities, who weren't really on great terms, to build trust and get to a place where they could both see the win-win. And so I spent a lot of time with both parties, really kind of talking through how I saw the issue, how I saw the benefits, listening to them, trying to address some of their concerns. And you know, that took time, but now I think trust has been built and a relationship has formed and a partnership has formed. And really who wins are the people in the city of Superior who now don't have an average out-of-pocket cost of $2,500 each. So for me, that's a huge win. And we turned a real potential sort of liability into something that is a massive benefit for the city.
Were the Republicans who were behind the bill that was eventually, you know, passed and signed, would they count among the willing partners in negotiating a better deal for homeowners, or were they just hoping the law would be signed and that would be it?
I honestly don't think they had any idea about any of it. Like, I don't think they knew what the implications were for the public. I don't think they knew, for example, that the city has an interest in acquiring the utility. I don't know if they knew that the city council voted down a proposal of support for the bill. Like, there's just so much that goes into a change like this. But to be a good representative, you have to be on the ground asking questions and, most importantly, listening. And it was just very clear to me they weren't aware of any of the dynamics. They just thought, well, this is simple. Let's change this law and give the company access to money. I don't think, you know, we should ever act that way when we're changing state law, and especially when we're talking about giving public money to a for-profit company.
Yeah. I mean, there is a real difference in whether your representative or state senator is on the ground in that particular area. We're talking to State Representative Angela Stroud from the 73rd Assembly District in that area, where you and all manner of other legislators will be looking at this new state budget agreement. And I want to ask you about that. But actually, before I forget, I did want to come back and ask about the history of all of this, because I know Earl Ingram in Milwaukee reminds us about this all the time. When we talk about lead water service lines, so many people think of it as some kind of Milwaukee-only problem. And this whole episode really serves to remind us that there are places all over the state where this is an issue. I had no idea it was this big of an issue in Superior until this came up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about the new maps and more diverse representation around the state is we need to realize that in a lot of ways, my district has more in common with Milwaukee than with other parts of the state, and certainly more in common with Milwaukee than suburban areas. Because I really think the distinction isn't urban versus rural. I think it's urban and rural versus the suburbs, because the suburbs are new construction, which, not no surprise, our entire shared revenue formula is about new construction. They get tons of resources, tons of advantages, but these older cities, and that's really what this is about, older cities with old infrastructure, and in some cases, shrinking populations, another thing that Milwaukee and in my district have in common, we have different challenges. So, you know, Ashland and Superior, these are really, really old cities. And as a result, we need infusions of dollars to replace infrastructure of all kinds, including lead lines. And this is, brings me up another point, though, taking money from this public pool, you know, that's serious business, because we're taking from cities like Milwaukee or other cities. And so that's just another reason to tread carefully in a decision like this and not to treat it like it's just something simplistic.
That's right. Alicia writes on YouTube. Sorry. Let's get this one here. We've got the lead water service lines in Kimberly as well. And again, you've got in Superior and Milwaukee, you've got these ports on Great Lakes with the infrastructure that is, you know, tied into that to a degree, you know, in past history. And it's good to be mindful of, you know, the whole range of the problem before you just immediately accept what is given to you by, say, the private sector. So, again, getting back to my next question of you having to meet with the full assembly and consider the state budget deal, and I have been going over all the details of it, it is most definitely going to get a wide array of Democrats for and against and Republicans for and against. Probably going to be the most bipartisan, the raw bipartisan vote on a budget we've seen in a long time. How are you feeling about it right now?
I'm still digging in. I mean, unfortunately, this process has been totally rushed. This isn't how we should do good government. The party of chaos continues to be the party of chaos, forcing really just bad governance practices. So, you know, I'm up early in part, not just for this, but because I'm still digging into the budget. I have super big concerns about public school funding in particular. I mean, by not raising general aid, what we're doing is putting more pressure on property taxes yet again. So it's kind of crazy to me that we would be touting that this budget has tax cuts at the same time that by refusing to raise general aid for schools, local school districts are going to have to raise property taxes to meet their levy. So this a tax cut in one pocket and then raising taxes in the other pocket, really we have to ask, what is the net benefit and to whom? And for working and middle-class people, it's not actually going to net out to a tax cut or to a benefit. And meanwhile, schools are the ones who are going to be blamed for having to raise their revenues through property taxes. So yet again, the state legislature is failing to meet the needs of public schools. And it's just super disappointing that we're having this conversation yet again.
So you think that the conversations will continue for folks who think that this budget just didn't go far enough to urge Governor Evers to just veto the whole thing, even though he worked out the deal. But there are people that would still like to just scrap this and try again.
I mean, that would be my position. That is my position, that we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't sign a bill into law that actually harms communities. I mean, it's really hard to undo 15 years of neglect of public schools in one budget. I understand that. But by refusing to increase general aid, we're just contributing to the problem yet again. So yeah, there is a small increase in special ed. That's huge. That's helpful. But you have to think about public school budgets as multifaceted. It's not just one thing. And when you have a big problem, it takes big solutions, not just fixing one part of the problem.
We are talking to State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, 73rd Assembly District, about things that are happening up there. A local update is coming up next for some of you. And then when we're all back together in 15 minutes, we will be talking to a retired pediatric nurse and school board member about her letter to the WIAA, critical of their new restrictions on transgender sports participation. So stick around for that. And then in our next hour, we will be talking to Earl Ingram and Melissa Baldoff with our climate check. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the Center, WRCE.
Find what you love, love what you find. A Total Wine and More, there's so much waiting for you. Spirits and beer, thousands of wines. Guides in the know when price is so low, it just might blow your mind. You're gonna find what you love and love what you find.
With curbside pickup available, you'll always find what you love only at Total Wine & More.
Drink responsibly, B21.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the interview system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Hendricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
On a morning show broadcast today from WRCO, we welcome in the studios some members of the Simons Recreation Complex. We'll introduce you to Brian and Wendy Goodman and Randy and Bonnie Smith, a couple of couples that utilize the Simons, and they were coerced, I guess, to join us in the morning show studio by Mr. Gary Goodkinack. How you doing, Gary?
Phil, how you doing?
Good.
Good to be here.
So you brought some more friends with you today.
And these are very good friends, too, by the way.
Good. Well, good to see you. Yeah, what's new at the Simons this summer?
Well, I tell you what, the big thing is trying to get more members, and our members have membership has really increased a lot since COVID. So I would say that's probably the big thrust, as has always been, is to try to get more people to enjoy Simons and come and see what they have to offer. Because I've always said Simons is for everybody. If you're not sure what you might like, go to their website. There's really something there for all ages.
Their leadership, they've done a good job, I think, of recruiting and going out, maybe thinking outside the box a little bit.
Right? I think so. Kyle and Mike have just done a wonderful job when they took over. They both got their individual strengths, and I give those guys a lot of credit for bringing it back to where it is right now.
You're still utilizing it as much as you always had, Gary?
I do, yeah. I'm there always every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 until 8:45 in the pool doing the water class like these guys are. And oftentimes I'll do another session like either in the afternoon at 1 o'clock. But it's usually if I go in the morning at 8 and I do it twice a day, it would be a 5:30 session.
I don't know if people are aware of your story, but it took a little arm-twisting for you to get to the science
first-timer. I have to always tell this story because it's a great one. My wife started at Simons probably in the early 2000s, something like that. And she was always trying to get me to go to water class. Well, at that time, my knees were good, and I could do other things. I used to run in the summertime, not very far, 2 or 3 miles, at 2 or 3 times a week. And then in the wintertime, I didn't have anything to do. And I take that back. In the summertime, I did my bike. In the wintertime, I did the running. But when I found out that my knees were bad and couldn't do that anymore, I thought, well, I can bike in the summertime, but what am I going to do in the wintertime? And Mary tried to get me to come, and like I said, I'd resisted. And when Dr. Beck said, you got to find something else to do, how about getting in the water classes? I thought, oh, yeah, good idea. I'll go ask my wife. And I asked, and she goes, no, you can't go in because you made fun of me all these years about going, and until you say you're sorry, you're not going. And so I said, I'm sorry, and it's something that we both do together, and it's something we really enjoy. So it kind of started out as I didn't need it when I could do the things I wanted to do, but when you couldn't do those things, you got to find something different, and this worked great for me.
It's become a real social thing for you, too, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, everybody feels better physically when you get done from the water. The water is great therapy. And Bonnie and Randy and Ryan and Wendy, they've found out that they get the physical benefits too, but they've made many, many friends.
Mm-hmm. You brought these friends along here. It's no accident you brought a couple of couples. I don't know if we've had that before on this.
Well, it's kind of funny because, like I said, Wendy, you can maybe talk about this too. You came to Simons before Brian.
Right.
Yep. And you want to tell us just a little bit about how that worked out, how you found out about Simons and how you got Brian involved?
Sure. I had a knee replacement probably 10, 12 years ago. I'm not just sure exactly when I had it done. And I went through the physical therapy up at the hospital, up at the clinic. And once I was past it enough that I could get in the water, I wanted to do the water aerobics because somebody had told me it was really a good thing to do. And so I joined Simons, and I was able to go out after work. I worked here in Richland Center, and so I was able to go out after work or even go before work and go to the morning class sometimes. And I went out, and when I went out after work, I saw you, Gary, because you were in one of the classes, and you would say, well, you're married to Brian. I know Brian from high school. You should get him to come. And Brian would like, nope, I'm not driving all the way in there. I'm not going to that. And no matter what I did, he was not going to come. And so that was that. And then fast forward about 10, 12 years, we're both retired, and we moved to Spring Green. We sold our home, and we downsized, and we moved to Spring Green. And Brian ran into Gary. And Brian came home one day and said, we're going to start going to Simons, and we're going to do water aerobics.
I didn't know I had that power.
And we're going to start going on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and we have to get up, and we have to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And he's like, yeah, the class starts at 8 o'clock, and so we'll have to leave it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, we will. And so we've been doing it ever since. I think that was about 3 years ago.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah.
So, that's amazing. And that's quite a commitment to come from, I mean, not that it's far away in Spring Green, but you got to come a little bit further.
Yeah, but it's okay. And, you know, I get up really early in the morning. It's not that I don't get up. It's just that I don't want to be dressed and have to leave that early in the morning some days. And so we go to Texas in the wintertime, so we miss it in the wintertime. And I've looked around to see if there's something like that in Texas, and there's not. We have an outdoor pool at the park where we stay in Texas, but it's just not the same. And boy, I really do miss it. And some of the other folks at the park also say, boy, I wish we had an inside pool, and I wish we could do some of that. I have a friend that goes somewhere else, and she goes to water aerobics regularly, and she really can speak to how much she benefits from it. It really is good. It helps us.
I bet you miss some of the people that you go to class with here at Simons when you're wintering in Texas, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely, because we've made a lot of friendships. I see a lot of people. You know, one of the ladies is 93 years old. I was telling my husband this morning, you know, she is such an inspiration to me. She is just such an inspiration. And she uses a walker. She came 2 weeks after she'd had a heart procedure done this summer. And I'm just like, you know, bless her heart. She knows how important this is. And she's told me that I wouldn't be able to walk if I didn't come to Water Aerobics.
This particular person that you're talking about has been on this show before.
I was guessing she probably had.
She was earlier.
Yeah.
Well, you've all been good spokespeople for the Simons today.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media, I'm Bo Henricks.
Thanks, Phil.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE. As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It could be a record-breaking year for tar spot. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a Wednesday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. That's the way it seems to be stacking up, according to Dr. Damon Smith, University Extension plant pathologist. He said, although it's only the 2nd of July, already indicators that this weather is built for tar spot.
Yeah, well, so there's 5 states right now reporting tar spot, which is probably, I'd have to go back and look over the last decade or so, but that might be the earliest we've had 5 states reporting tar spot. So just to sort of give you, timeliness piece here, the weather just really has lined up. That disease triangle's lined up and things are moving along. Now, I don't think folks need to panic right now, especially in Wisconsin. But what that does mean is we need to get out and scout, right?
That's for sure. Dr. Damon Smith, University Extension plant pathologist, on why we need to start looking early for things like tar spot and even white mold in our soybeans. Smith says that right now they've got a great cache of information available in one spot to help guide you on your scouting. BadgerCropNetwork.com, where under the Resources tab, you'll find the Wisconsin Disease Forecasting Tool, and that will actually take you to the Wisconsin Weather Station Network, where you can evaluate your area for potential tar spot, gray leaf spot, as well as the potential for white mold in soybeans. Again, the website, BadgerCropNetwork.com.
Don't let sick calves get you down and drain your profits. Get your calves up and moving with BioVet's Calf Electrolyte. Our base light product contains balanced electrolytes for restoring and maintaining proper fluid levels in scouring calves. Baselight also provides additional energy to support recovery. It's easy to mix, and calves are easy to drink it down to the last drop. Learn more about Baselight at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
Hey, gut yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers, the Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. 2 winners will be selected from 4 geographical divisions, with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Yesterday, barrel cheese gained 3 at 172.5. 40-pound block cheese was up a quarter at 172.25, while AA butter gained a quarter, 260.25 per pound. This morning, December corn's down 2. November soybeans are up 3. And August milk is down 2. There's a quick market snapshot on a Wednesday. I'm Pam Yonke.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have a slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm late this afternoon and again tonight. Otherwise, mostly sunny today with a high right around 87 this afternoon. Tonight, we'll drop down to the mid-60s. Tomorrow, sunshine, scattered storms, high of 87. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 64.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. Pat Kreitlow and Trigby Olson will join us to discuss breaking news as it continues on the state budget and in Washington. Plus, what's worse, join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
.735 now on these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. On the text line, Tom in Hartford, another great guest, Pat. It's uplifting to hear an intelligent, caring representative. Ain't it, though? It's just nice and refreshing when you get that compared to some of the things that you see out there in the news cycle. This is going to be a big day in Madison, not just because the legislature's meeting on the budget, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court has announced that today it will release its decision on its interpretation of an 1849 statute that some had purported to be an abortion ban. Others interpreted it as doing something else about protecting pregnant women. The law has been on hold since a Dane County judge ruled, I believe in the fall of 2023, that the law did not apply to consensual abortions. It was appealed to the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case last November and is now ready to issue its ruling. And so that will come sometime today. So keep it tuned to your favorite shows across the Civic Media Radio Network to learn more. Let's turn now to a matter in our schools about participation in sports and other activities, and especially as it relates to members of the transgender community, that we're going to meet with a guest from the Baraboo area who is a retired pediatric nurse, sits on the school board, but is going to join us in a private capacity, and wrote a letter to the WIAA expressing concerns about a policy that restricts transgender student athletes to participate only in the sports categories corresponding to their sex assigned at birth. So let's learn more about that and what perhaps might be a better way forward with Carolyn Bonanno, who joins us now from Baraboo. Carolyn, good morning. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm good. It's frustrating, but good.
It does sound frustrating. You note in your letter to the members of the board of the Wisconsin Interscholastic Activities Association that their policy fails to account for current scientific understanding and may not serve the best interests of all student athletes. And you say this as a retired registered pediatric nurse and somebody who has certainly followed school matters carefully on school boards. So can you talk a bit more about, you know, what prompted the letter and then, you know, basically your overview of the policies that prompted the letter?
Because I am on a board and I learned about this, and I had been hearing rumblings, and I always heard that, well, this isn't true, that they shouldn't, it's not scientifically sound. And so I decided to do some of my own research because facts seem to be able to speak louder than feelings, and I think it's important. So I looked it up, and I tried to find things that said that transgender women had an ability over other female athletes, and there was very little evidence to that at all. And as my brother said to me the other day, this whole thing, it just seems to be a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. And I think that it puts our most vulnerable students at higher risk. And so I just felt it was so wrong. And it's kind of like the first steps to dictatorship. If this happened immediately after Trump wrote his letter, his executive order banning transgender females, and this only and WIA's policy only refers to transgender females. It doesn't look at anything else. I don't think they did any research whatsoever. They just followed along. They were in lockstep.
Yeah, it does have very much the sense of just a bit of political backlash, if you will, to things like legalizing same-sex marriage. Then there's another, let's find a new category of people to bash. You write that current research indicates that athletic performance differences are more complex than a simple binary categorization of assigned sex at birth, and that athletic performance varies enormously among individuals within any gender category. And that really gets to one of the things that has really stuck with me, is this ridiculous sense that somebody, a minor or an adult, would go through what you need to go through just to win a race? I mean, I thought it was silly on its face, but I mean, like you said, you had to look into the fact based of it to say between individual variations and simple binary categorization, there's a lot more to this than the surface talking points.
Yes, and it kind of boggles the mind as to why people would think that this is true. I mean, one of my first experiences as a school board member, I've only been on for about a year, a little over a year, was sitting down on a summer learning symposium at a table with a gentleman who was trying to push his facts through and saying things. We can't have these big guys competing against women. And I just looked at him and said, I don't think that's true. And I ended up leaving the table, and it was, and at WASB, the Wisconsin Association of School Board, has always, I mean, this person has been trying to put through policies to change it on a school board level, and WASB has declined, and we as school board members have declined this. So it boggles my mind that WIAA can have this much power. It bothers me. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I mean, there's still a lot to learn about these kind of things. And at best, it should be an individual categorization. I mean,
right. And they are not the only body that is working with this issue. And you note that the International Olympic Committee and other sports bodies have recognized that it's not about transition per se, but the timing of it, particularly where it occurs, you know, in terms of puberty. And certainly, we're talking about things like testosterone levels, not simply the fact that there's been a transition or treatment, but again, time, testosterone, a whole lot of other factors that the International Olympic Committee is trying to be cognizant of. And you're concerned that the WIAA is being a little too simplistic about this, I think.
It very. And it's, and their policy was just very simplistic. There was no whys or wherefores about it. It was just a very simple statement saying this is the way it is. And I don't think they gave it any thought whatsoever. And it just seems punitive to me and dictatorial. So I, like I said, I did the research. The timing is important. And the thing is we don't know what's going on in anybody's mind or head or physical things. And it is something that you need to consider personally. I think they're pandering toward the fears of other people who don't have an understanding of what's going on. And frankly, why do we care? I mean, it's really small numbers. And it's really important.
Really small. and it just, again, it provides opportunity for talking points, but also, as you note, privacy violations. The current policy, you write, forces families to engage in legal proceedings to secure their children's right to participate, which inherently compromises student privacy. It exposes personal medical information and gender identity status in public legal proceedings, violating the fundamental privacy that all students deserve. Or to put it a bit more crassly, but it certainly has been, so I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before, the fact that some people want to do this is going to mean that a whole lot of other kids are going to be traumatized by either a coach, a school official, a lawyer, somebody. That's kind of
They're going to want to look down a kid's pants. What the heck is this?
And when I was meeting with some legislators in aid said that to me, that somebody, a representative said that, well, just check them. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, and as my daughter says to me, she says, Mom, it's weird that these people care so much about children's privates.
Yes.
It's weird.
It is weird. And it hasn't been said nearly enough, but yes. It just is. So let's try to look forward on this. And we're talking to Carolyn Bonanno from Baraboo about this letter she wrote to the WIAA. And you asked the board to consider several things. You write, for example, developing individualized assessment protocols that consider factors such as hormone therapy duration, individual athletic metrics, consulting with medical professionals, sports scientists, LGBTQ+ advocacy groups, and review policies from other states and organizations that have developed more nuanced approaches. I think that's the key word there, is nuanced or individualized or consulting. All of these things sound like best practices moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the world of medicine is, best practices. It is evidence-based. And that should be how everything is. Things should be based on evidence, on what is least destructive or hurtful to other people, and if it's even a necessary thing. You have to look at these things. You don't just willy-nilly. This is how dictatorships happen. Yeah. People just fall in line, and nobody says anything. So yeah. I felt it was important to say something.
And so you urge them to refocus the WIAA's mission on supporting and including all student athletes rather than operating as a restrictive enforcement body, return to the core educational mission of fostering student development through athletics rather than creating barriers that force families to choose between their children's privacy and their right to participate in school activities. So that was the note. The letter was dated May 22nd. Has there been any response or reaction since then?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing. I emailed the members individually, and I sent this letter, and I have not heard a thing back.
And it sounds like there's no current plans to reconsider or do anything else on the issue?
Nope.
On the comment sections here from CT, the ban on transgendered student athletes buys into the notion that women are inherently weaker than men, which is ridiculous. And Alicia notes that policies like this do way more harm than good. And I mean, none of this strikes me as so unwieldy that you can't consider a better path forward.
Exactly. But I think that because of the current political-ish system, we have somebody who thinks that he can just tell people what to do without any backlash. And whether you have it or not, he will just do what he wants. And it seems like the WIAA just fell in line. And well, unfortunately, and it's bothersome to me. I'm sorry. It's bothersome to me because I thought that the school boards we're supposed to give guidance to the WIAA, and it doesn't seem to be that way. It seems to be the other way around.
Well, it does. And when you talk about one individual, it certainly is about more than just, say, you know, who is president. Mm-hmm. You have, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who has held up millions and millions of dollars in UW funding to attack diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think, again, I'm projecting, but I wouldn't be surprised if WIAA board members were mindful of that and didn't want the Speaker of the Assembly threatening to cut off funds for high school sports and, you know, being focused on state budgets and school district budgets instead of the welfare of our kids is a hell of a way to run the state.
Exactly. And it seems to be backwards in my estimation, but
well, it certainly does, and that's why I really appreciate your willingness to come on and talk about the note that you sent. I hope you keep us updated, Carolyn Bonanno, as far as whether you get any kind of a response and any possible path forward. Carolyn, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. A local update is coming up next for some of you, and then in our next hour, we will be talking to Earl Ingram about things happening in the Milwaukee area. We will also have Jimmy Kuska coming up next for some of you, talking about what he's seen from Southwest Wisconsin, and then an hour later, James Kelly from Northwest Wisconsin, doing the same thing as we do here, mornings, powered by Up North News, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world.
We're born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk. Drive sober. Or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at ZeroInWisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the interview system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night. And today, the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers. Through CPR education and access to AEDs, nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wrce.fm/contest-terms. As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WRCE. I'm Bo Henricks, and here's what's going on in Richland Center this morning.
On this part of our morning show today, we're here with Lyrica Marks, Richland County Fair Coordinator, who is back for another season to tell us about the great things going on. It is that time to start thinking about it, isn't it, Lyric?
Well, yes, it is. We're about 2 months out now, and I'm very excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us last year about the fair in Richland County. How did it go?
Well, it was my first year, and from what I saw myself, I was very satisfied with how it turned out, given it was my first year. But also, I am very much looking forward to what I can do this year now that I have a whole year under my belt. But between, you know, the tractor pull and Ashley Ryan coming, things went very well, yeah.
So you're getting along a little easier this year, I'm guessing, because you know the deadlines and when this has to be done and that has to be done, I'm sure.
Well, also, I was hired back in March of last year, which was, what, 6 months before the fair? So let me tell you, organizing a fair in half the time, not as easy. But now that I know what I'm doing and I have more time to do it, this year has been much more of a breeze than I dealt with last year, but still just as exciting.
Well, the Richland County Fair coming up again in September, but there are also other deadlines that you want to be aware of and make our listeners aware of.
That is correct. The biggest one being our fair entries coming up August 1st, which we do have fair books now. They are located at my office and at the UW Extension office, but also online for those that make that easier. But we do have those fair entries coming up along with our sponsorship and sponsorship and vendor deadlines.
Where is your office located at?
My office looks located right on the fairgrounds, so the fun place.
People can see you there, and then the extension office as well for books.
That is correct.
Okay. Some people still do the old school. I mean, it's kind of fun to get that book and look at all the possible categories, too, isn't it?
Yes, it is, especially when you get a fun cover on it, and then you get to look through everything, and it's you can highlight things and everything. I totally get that.
Awesome. So that's coming up. Deadlines for that. And you're always looking for sponsors and for more vendors to be on the grounds too, aren't you?
That is correct. We always are looking for more vendors and sponsors. Of course, we appreciate anything and everything we can get. And what makes the fair is the community. And so I believe that the more the community is involved, the more that we can do with it. But along with that, our vendors, I want to be able to showcase what everybody can bring in. And I'm looking to really build that this year and, of course, years going forward. But, for example, we do have Cabela's, who is looking forward to coming to the fair this year. I'm looking at getting a possible winery and doing some more stuff with that. And then also just giving people more of an opportunity with that. So
That's awesome to get Cabela's in there like that. And they'll be having some of their goods on display, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to make it so that we have something for everyone, whether it's the old farmer who wants to go hunt or if it's the young kid who wants to go watch the balloon artists. I'm trying to make sure everybody has something.
So that is exciting news. And then I think the next question in everybody's mind is entertainment. What are you looking at as far as the big draws this year?
So we have decided to change things up a little bit, and we are trying to bring in some new stuff just to, you know, give people more of that excitement. But this year we are bringing back the Demo Derby, which is always a crowd favorite. And then we're also having a high mileage concert, which would be Friday night. So I'm looking forward to bringing in that local group. And then something brand new is going to be a lumberjack show on Thursday.
Lumberjack show. What do you know about that?
All I know right now is that they are very excited to come and that they have a bunch of activities planned. They have an interactive camp planned. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what they can do.
That's awesome. You know, when you think about that, you think about, you know, tree chopping and log rolling. I'm not sure what'll be involved, but
it's a surprise to us all.
We'll have to come and find that out. So that's Thursday night. High mileage is Friday night. The Demo Derby is Saturday night.
That is correct.
Great. And I know, Lyrica, you're looking at having some other entertaining things on the ground simultaneously, right?
Yes, we are. We are actually going to try to bring in some more side entertainment as well throughout the day to keep everything going and things exciting so that it's not, you know, main entertainment at night. We are also bringing in a polka group and then also having a line dancing class. We will have one of the local dance groups come in and just a bunch of, like, tinier things like that that we can still display and give those groups a bigger chance, which I'm really excited about that as well.
So that will be probably in the connection building stage area?
Yep, that is correct, which is right next to where my office is. So,
I don't know, that polka band, it might get kind of wild in there.
I'm just saying, at 1 to 3 p.m. that Friday night, I don't know, you might get a bunch of dancers.
Well, that's really fun. And I think, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, being a young person, kind of, you know, trying to look at it, maybe a little bit more youthful, I think it's working out. Looks like you got your ducks in a row, so to speak.
I'm really excited about all the things that I can look at this year, especially after having experienced a whole year under my belt and being able to use that knowledge now and see how I can move forward with it.
So for those that don't know, you're also Crawford County's fair coordinator.
That is also true. I just took that over in February, so I'm now full-time fair coordinating between the two counties.
So Crawford County's is prior to Richland County's, right?
Yes, it is, by 2 weeks. This year, that fair is going to be August 21st through the 24th.
So what can you tell us about Crawford County's fair?
Well, Crawford County, I'm still getting to know a little bit, but I'm really excited to be able to do both. For that one, our entertainment is going to be the truck and tractor pull on Friday night, the demo derby again on Saturday, and then we recently started doing bull riding last year. So we will be bringing that back, which I know a lot of people are excited for that.
There are similarities, obviously, with both fairs.
Oh, yeah. There are definitely similarities. There are also a lot of differences. With the similarities, obviously, you know, I have to find vendors, I have to find sponsors, things like that. But also, whether it's the entertainment or just the crowd, they're, like I said, the fair is based off the community. And there are different communities there. And I want them to be able to blend together, but I also want to keep them as independent as they want to be. And both fairs have things of their own that they identify with, and I want to keep going with that, but also keep building them at the same time.
Both fairs are focused on the youth, though. That's kind of the main thing.
That is very true. They both have the 4-H, the FFA, the everything with exhibiting. So those also, I'm still having fair entries open, which I know that in years past, the fair entries there have shut or closed on July 1st. And this year we're doing them till July 20th to give all the kids extra time with that. So I'm really looking forward to it.
That's Crawford County.
That is correct.
We appreciate you coming in. Lyrica Marks, Richland County and Crawford County Fair Coordinator on this portion of the morning show.
You've been listening to WRCE's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Take your favorite WRCE shows with you on the go by downloading the Civic Media app in the Apple or Google stores. For WRCE and Civic Media,
this is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A partial verdict has been decided in Sean Combs' trial, but the jury cannot agree on the racketeering charge, so they'll be back at it this morning. ABC's Aaron Katursky with more.
The 8-man, 4-woman jury reached a verdict on 2 counts of sex trafficking and 2 counts of transportation for the purposes of prostitution. But on racketeering conspiracy, the jury wrote in a note, "We have jurors with unpersuadable opinions on both sides." Combs looked shaken, slumped in his seat, wiping his eyes as his lawyers stood around him, his children rushing back to court.
The suspect in the Idaho college student murders will be in court today, where he is expected to change his plea to guilty. Brian Koberger expected to receive 4 consecutive life sentences with no chance of parole. 2,000 flight cancellations on Tuesday because of the weather, most of them in and out of New York and Washington. Some of those affected by the airline troubles, members of Congress who have been called back, the House anyway, to the Capitol to vote on the budget bill. This is ABC News.